the speed and the ease of access to digital credit make these loans very appealing. These loans have the potential to help households to cope with unexpected shocks, but this is a not regulated market and there are problems.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Millions of people who need to borrow money right now are going to get a digital loan. And thanks to technology, it's now fast and easy to get that loan, but large numbers of borrowers are defaulting on them. So is the process maybe too fast? That's the question that a new paper asks, based on the repayment details of thousands of digital loans given by a lender in Mexico. And Silvia Perina at Northeastern is one of the authors. Silvia, welcome.
Hello, Tim.
Now, Silvia, first of all, what's the difference between digital credit and, I suppose you could call it, normal credit?
Digital credit has emerged as an alternative for providing short-term, high-interest loans directly to consumers. And it differs from normal credit, as you said, in at least three ways. So it's remote, it's instantaneous, and it's automated. Remote means that it does not require the customer to visit a store or an agent, like in person. It's instantaneous because the time from loan application to approval is immediate. It takes a few minutes at most. And then it's automated because digital lenders use what are called alternative credit scores and not the traditional credit scores that are calculated by credit bureau. And this is a key feature in developing countries where most individuals don't have access to credit scores because they're not formally included in the financial system.
That's fairly new. So how widespread is digital lending in low and middle income countries?
So this is a market that has been rapidly growing. Just to give you an idea, one of the first players in this industry was M-Shwari in Kenya. Mm. It was established in 2012 and within the first 2 years made over 20 million loans. If we look at another country in sub-Saharan Africa, Mpawa in Tanzania, during its first 2 years, it gave loans to about 5 million borrowers. There is a study from 2018, which I believe is the most recent study out there, that estimated that about 160 billion of digital loans were extended in 2017.
Gosh.
And this figure is likely to exceed 200 billion this year.
So do we know who's doing the lending, who's doing the borrowing, why the people who are borrowing are borrowing?
This is still an emerging market. We need to get a much better picture than what we have now. We know for digital lenders that there are two types of lenders or models. One is a bank telco partnership. So this means that we have a mobile phone operators who partners with a bank. That has been the key modality in Africa. I've already mentioned M-Shwari in Kenya and Mpawa in Tanzania. And then the second modality are fintechs, like the one in our study. They operate through a website that you can access on your computer or even more easy on a smartphone. A huge one is Ant Financial in China, Alibaba also in China. We have fintechs in Latin America and sub-Saharan Africa as well. Who's borrowing? As I mentioned earlier, we don't have a really good picture. There are a few emerging studies. So from Malawi, we know that borrowers are not representative of the bottom of the pyramid, and because they have a much higher level of education and a much higher level of income than the average population there. In our study, we have only access to administrative data, and the Know Your Customer data we get show that instead they are poorer than the average Mexican worker. If we consider financial inclusion, in sub-Saharan Africa, usually borrowers of digital loans are generally unbanked, and they can access digital credit because there is a mobile network and there are alternative scoring mechanisms. In our setting, however, borrowers have to have a bank account in order to borrow because the digital loans will be deposited in that account. So really, it's depending on the setting. We might have very different borrowers with very different characteristics depending on the type of lenders we're considering and the country we are considering. Why do people borrow money using digital credit? And so the evidence that is emerging is that it is mostly to provide short-term liquidity to vulnerable households. So there is a financial survey in Kenya that found that they're used mostly for day-to-day needs and emergency. Another study in Malawi is confirming that. And this is information mostly for sub-Saharan Africa. For Mexico, we don't know. But again, if we look at the data in our setting, these are small loan amounts, $75 to $150, with a very short term, a week to 30 days. So it is possible that even in this case, considering also that our population is poorer than the average Mexican worker, they are used for short-term liquidity problems.
So for this fintech in Mexico that you worked with, can you take me through the process of getting a loan, how that works?
So as I said earlier, borrowers or potential borrowers, they interact through a browser, could be on a smartphone or it could be on a computer. They fill in an application and select the amount and the term of the loan. It's a quick process and it's done within a single browsing session. Then successful applicants are told, well, your loan has been pre-approved and needs to be processed. And once it's processed, it's going to be deposited in your bank account. And this happens usually within a few hours.
Compared to the process that they would have gone through before, and especially if they were using an unofficial moneylender, sounds great. So what's the problem here?
Well, the speed and the ease of access to digital credit make these loans very appealing. These loans have the potential to help households to cope with unexpected shocks. But this is a not regulated market and there are problems. First of all, these are small loans, but they are very expensive loans. So the APR for an M-Shwari loan is around 140%. In our case is 480%. And for loans from Airtel Malawi, we have 1,000%. So very expensive loans, although small. Then there is the other component, the immediacy and easiness of getting like a digital loan. So this could be really instantaneous consumption at its worst. And sometimes it is marketed in such way. So for example, there is a lot of anecdotal evidence emerging that shows that people might use digital credit to finance things like gambling. And so we do worry about self-control here. We see also very high default rates. They are 27% in our data for the study in Malawi, 15%. And we have to think about the fact that default is bad generally for household welfare, but also because if you default on a loan, it has a negative impact on one's credit score, which can reduce the access to future loans. And just to give you like an idea of how these defaults are actually affecting people's life, millions of people have been reported to the Kenyan Credit Bureau for defaulting on small loans. These are like few dollar loans, but they still get reported by M-Shwari. And this is also the case in our study. So if a borrower like defaults on a loan, it gets reported to the Credit Bureau. And then the very last thing is that when you get the condition of a loan, in most cases, these are done like on a smartphone with very small footprint. And so you might not fully understand the terms of the loan. And clearly, the speed of the process doesn't help you. So many problems. And we do believe that regulation of the digital credit market is needed, as well as some consumer protection measures.
Yes, because when I heard that it was causing a lot of defaults, I'm thinking, well, that's clearly a problem for the banks. But the way you're describing it, there are big problems on both sides of this market.
Yeah, that is correct. It is a problem like for lenders if they're not able to enforce repayments, but it's clearly a problem for borrowers in terms of over indebtedness, struggling to repay, default, lower credit scores, and generally a negative impact on one's welfare.
The obvious solution that a lot of people would jump for is to make it harder to get a loan or to make it harder to get a loan above a certain amount. Would that solve the problem?
There is no really like easy answer, because what you're proposing, there is clearly like a trade-off between access and default. And I think we need a better understanding of this market and testing of potential customer protection measures in different settings too. For example, if we were to make it difficult to get a digital loan, or if you were like to credit ration in some ways, measure could backfire, particularly if an individual has to cope with unexpected shocks. That being said, said, though, I do think that there are a lot more low-hanging fruits that could still protect consumers without restricting access to digital loans per se. So a few examples would be, well, lender could be required to provide pricing information in a way that is more transparent, but also that is designed for small mobile phone screens. Also, these aggressive marketing, particularly like before a match, could be regulated. And finally, our work pushed forward the idea that speed of these loans could also be regulated.
Because the natural experiment that you were presented with here was the fact that some of these loans have delays attached to them. Where do these delays come from?
Yeah, that is correct. In our paper, we studied the role of speed of delivery of digital loans on repayments and therefore like defaults. So let me explain how the process comes from. So we have data from these Mexican lenders, and we know down to the millisecond, really, when a client applies for a loan and when she receives the loan in her bank account. So the entire process, we have timestamps. And so what we do is we use this information to calculate how long a client has to wait in order to get her loan. On average, it takes 10 hours, but we see a lot of variation. Let me explain this part. We figure out a way to identify loans that are similar, but because of the way loans are processed, they take a lot longer to be deposited. And then we compare the likelihood of repayment of these two groups of loans. So imagine loans application, they come in like every minute because different people apply at different times, and just take one loan, a given loan. Once it is processed, it is ready to be disbursed into the bank account. But here's the catch we take advantage of. The loan is not immediately disbursed. So it's not that once it's approved, it gets immediately disbursed. Instead, it is entered into a spreadsheet and it just sits there. Think about the fact that it happens for every loan. Each time a new loan is processed, it is entered into these spreadsheets and waits there. So loans essentially accumulate there and they form a queue. Now, 2 to 4 times a day, an employee will take it and will send it to the lender's bank. And once the bank receives the queue, then it's going to process instantaneously like all of these loans. And that's when the money enters the borrower's account. And then a new queue gets created and the process starts again. The loans that were added first to the queue remain in the queue longer than those that were added last. Okay, and so what we do in our analysis is we essentially compare like loans that were added last to a queue to the loans that were added first to the next queue. So then going back to your question of how long these delays are, well, we have a difference in the delay of almost 10 hours. And is this big or small? Well, this means roughly doubling the total amount of time that it takes to obtain a loan. So instead of 10 hours, it would be 20 hours.
And so what is the difference in the likelihood of default between similar loans and similar borrowers who end up waiting a long time because they were first on the spreadsheet or waiting a lot less time because they were last on the spreadsheet before those loans were disbursed?
On average, the loans that are quick have a default of 26%, while loans which sits longer in the queue have a default of 20%.
Oh.
So if you have to wait longer, your default drops. The difference is about 6 percentage points. And this may sound small, but it's actually large if we compare it to the average default of 27%. And so it corresponds to a 21% decrease in default.
Yes, you say that it's quite small, but it's quite a big difference for a delay of only a few hours. Do we know what's going on here that makes the difference?
Yeah. Well, there are no comparable studies within the digital credit literature because it's very small. And so what we did was to say like, well, let's look at studies within microcredit for comparison. And in particular, we considered other type of financial intervention, which aimed at reducing defaults. And actually, our effects are not that outrageous. So research studies find a reduction in the default of microcredit loans that goes anywhere from 21% all the way up to 370%. So not that outrageous. Well, this makes sense. We wanted to figure out why this happened. We have some ideas, but we don't have clear proof. We hint at behavioral biases and intra-household bargaining as potential mechanism. And let me explain this a little further. So there is a large behavioral literature that suggests that waiting period, which provides time for deliberation, for thinking carefully about choices, improve the consumption choices of individual and also could induce borrowers to make a repayment plan. So in our case, it's possible that having to wait 10 extra hours, provide borrowers with extra time to deliberate about how am I going to use this loan, but also to develop a repayment plan. And then if we think about household dynamics, if there is no delay, an individual may be able to apply for, obtain, and use a loan without confronting their partners. But if the loan is delayed overnight, then household bargaining may play a role. And in the end, this intra-household negotiation could improve repayment, either through discussing it or through pooling resources. Lastly, I should also mention another bad potential explanation. That would be if you are an impatient borrower and there was a delay, you might have at the same time applied for another loan elsewhere.
Yes.
And so if you get approved by both lenders, then you might end up with two loans instead of one, which wouldn't necessarily be a good thing, particularly because these loans are expensive.
If there was always a delay in transferring money, are you arguing that overall it would lower default rates across the board?
Yeah, so you're getting at the natural questions that comes out from our result, which is, would regulating the speed of the disbursement of digital credit protect consumers from default? If the reason behind the defaults is behavioral biases and intra-household bargaining, then the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. But if a delay causes over-borrowing, then the answer is no.
Mm.
I would say that we don't have a clear answer, but our study justifies additional work on mandatory waiting period. And my co-author and I are certainly moving in this direction. Yeah.
I suppose for the banks, they're pulled in two directions, aren't they? If there are large amounts of defaults, they lose money. But then again, if they force everybody to wait for their loans, then they lose business. So if there was going to be a change like this, it sounds from what you're saying that it would have to be done through regulation rather than the self-interest of the fintechs.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It's possible that lenders could make a change themselves, but I frankly wouldn't hold my breath about lenders self-regulating.
Yeah.
Competition for lowering the speed is fierce, and lenders are using their speed as a positive attribute to get more clients. So for example, just to give you one example, one of many, Ant Financial introduced what they call the 310 system, 3 minutes for the application, 1 minute for approval and transfer, and zero human touch. So digital credit firms are in a bit of a rat race over speed. And the idea is that, well, you can get more clients if you are the quickest lender, but to be the quickest, you have to invest heavily in technology and in automations. What I think is that lenders would benefit from mandated waiting period for several reasons. They wouldn't have to devote scarce resources to invest in speed. They could also expect, based on our results, on higher repayment rates. In addition, like, one might wonder, well, but if you are asking a borrower to wait, the delay could cause the digital lender to actually lose this client and not to have a client that ask like for a second loan or a third loan. And in our study, we actually look at this and we find that borrowers who were delayed on their first loan were not less likely to borrow in the future. Digital lender could be making more money from slower loans, actually. And our view is really that regulation here could be a good thing for both lenders and borrower. And if we think about it, there could actually be one additional benefit. If these are mandated waiting period, what this implies is that lenders can't compete on speed anymore, and they would be forced to compete along other dimensions. So what if, ideally, they were to start competing more on price?
Mm.
Consumers would really benefit from that.
It will be interesting to find out how regulation responds to this, how the lenders respond to this. It, as you say, it's a subject where more research is going to answer some of those questions. But for now, Sylvia,
yes,
thank you very much.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, and till we get that extra research, you'll really want to read this paper. The title of the paper is Too Fast, Too Furious Digital Credit Delivery Speed and Repayment Rates. And the authors are Alfredo Berlando, Michael Kuhn, and Sylvia Prina. Also, don't forget to check out VoxDev's mobile money, VoxDev Lit. That's VoxDev's new dynamic literature reviews. It's a literature review done like a wiki. It's going to be constantly updated to keep it current. Sylvia, for the sorts of evolving research that you're doing at the moment, it's a great idea, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a fantastic resource for anybody that's interested in the topic and wants to know research that is very recent on top of consumer protection issues and other issues related with mobile money.
Yep, it's a fast-moving topic, so the Mobile Money VoxDev Lit's going to be a great resource for anyone who's interested in this in the future. This has been a VoxDev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. Oh, we're on all of the popular platforms now. And our past episodes, as always, at voxdev.org.